just to number our days. A few decades ago, I received a sheepish phone call from my parents asking if I would mind going across the state line. At that time, I was in New Jersey, so I was going over to Pennsylvania to buy $50 worth of lottery tickets. In my family, one never minds what one is asked to do, especially if the one asking is your mother. So, somewhat against my better theological judgment, I set out. The first line I encountered in Yardley, I believe, and in which I stood for 15 minutes, was an incredible hodgepodge of God's children, a mix of ages and races and economic classes. Yet, without distinction, each of us held the secret thought that we were about to have our lives radically changed. Our limits, in a sense, transgressed. But when the line did not move, and when one weary ticket holder returned, announcing as he walked down the line, 4.5 hours, think about it. So back in the days when, you know, when the lottery hit big, the lines were long. Well, I did not even think. I absented myself from hope. But on the way home, I did think about it, as a preacher often does. And what I thought about was what it would mean in the line at the grocery store or the post office or the turnpike, not to mention in a lottery line, what it would mean to live with a sense of time left. What would we do and what would we dare if we knew our time left were limited? Lottery lines? I think not. But what then? We just ask, what do we do and what are we daring in the face of the fact that the time each of us has left is limited? I want to wrestle this morning with the strange gift of our finitude, our limits, our human frailty, our time left. A few years ago, we had a constantly cheerful minister in town, Carol Blair wrote, from the vantage point of Madison, Minnesota, in the 60s. No one was less apprehensive than he. He wasn't nervous about the hydrogen bomb. He wasn't nervous about our participation in the Vietnam War. Then he became critically ill. And upon recovery, he preached for an entire winter the first serious, thoughtful sermons of his life, or at least of his life here. Any number of people complained that his sermons had gone morbid and negative. They hadn't. He had simply learned a sense of time left. Where does one actually acquire a sense of time left? I'm not sure. For some, it must come, as it did for the preacher in Minnesota, when faced with one's own death. And finitude is not just a philosophical category, but a present probability. When the diagnosis is doubtful, when the accident almost fatal, when age does catch up and begin to significantly overtake the you that you have been all of your life. And I think the sense of time left is also lurking in all the little limits we are given day by day until our last. The biological clock that ticks within a woman and begins to close off the possibility of bearing children. The societal clock that begins to put you out to pasture before you are ready to retire. The signals within the business or the academy or the political structures that you have gone about as far as you're going to go. Sometimes a sense of time left can be as arbitrary and fleeting as a deadline. Incredible, said a friend, how much housework I get done in a day when I know the in-laws are about to appear for supper. Or how much homework can be done when the prospect of a party another noted with interest that he had accomplished more in his last 3 years leading up to retirement than at any time before. Maybe this nagging sense of time left speeds us on our way. An arbitrary endpoint that sends us momentarily into the future with a renewed sense of urgency. Or again, and in a different way, a sense of time left may be Jews earned the positions attained, the money amassed. Art is nothing. A dream. Grass. Dust. A toil and trouble. When placed in the presence of the God who brought forth the heavens and the earth. That's a very hard word for us to hear in a society that so values individual achievements or importance, and at such an early age teaches our children to value the same. Therefore, in contrast to those who would let a sense of time left propel them toward filling their lives full of even more achievements and purposes and goals, this man calls into question the assumption that there even is such a thing as human achievement. For the psalmist, any presumption that our efforts will amount to something of eternal importance is a presumption to be like God, to have no end. And God's judgment against that desire is nothing other than the fact of our mortality, our finitude, our sense of time left. No wonder Old Testament professor Arthur Weiser writes in his commentary on this psalm, no wonder that a man who seeks in his life his will and his pleasure, his own will and his own pleasure, is bound to end in this disappointment. For all pleasure seeks perpetuity. In death, God has set a limit to such human expectations. In death, God has set a limit to human aspiration, because in death we come face to face with the love for which we were made, the love that knows no end, the love that God is. But the psalmist encounters at his own end his finitude, his time left, is both the limit to his human aspirations, but so much more than that. He encounters the love that knows no end. Gone is any illusion of gaining God's notice by clean living or lasting achievements. Gone is any frantic need to make a name for himself before he breathes his last. We all go to God naked and empty-handed. So instead he prays, satisfy us in the morning with thy steadfast love, that we may rejoice and be glad all our days. It is the prayer of one who trusts in the presence of the eternal God. But our days, no matter how many or how few, are fulfilled, are satisfied by the unmerited gift of God's steadfast love and mercy and grace. Let thy word be manifest to thy servants, thy glorious power to their children. It is the prayer of one who no longer is driven by his own purposes, but who is held in God's purpose and so freed for the work of a servant. Establish thou the work of our hands upon us, yea, the work of our hands establish thou it. It is the prayer of one who has been given work to do by the one who has been our dwelling place in all generations, the one who is from everlasting to everlasting our God. For the psalmist, that revelation came as he faced his own death in the presence of the eternal God. But for you and for me and for the minister in Madison, Minnesota, that revelation has been given in the death of him whose time left was bracketed by the cross. In him, the infinite entered the finite. In him,